This is your brain on risk. This is Mind Over Money, the podcast where Kevin Cook exposes the psychology of investing.
Welcome back to Mind Over Money. I'm Kevin Cook, your field guide and storyteller for the fascinating arena of behavioral economics. We've got a fun topic today, and it's all about the streaming wars. And I brought in an expert, a resident expert here at Zacks, who's going to help me sort through it. But I want to tell you my interest in it because I don't watch a lot of TV. So you can't ask me what subscriptions I have or anything like that because I just don't watch a lot of TV. But I am extremely interested in one company that is just intertwined with all these streaming platforms, whether you're talking about Netflix or Amazon or HBO or Roku or Disney. Oh, and today is the launch of Disney Plus, which we're hearing a lot of buzz about. And the company that I'm interested in is the advertising company, and that is The Trade Desk. The Trade Desk is this unique company that is taking sort of the Google and Facebook model and applying it to the entire web and the entire realm of connected TV. And they call their model programmatic. And what it allows an ad agency or a corporation like Procter & Gamble, who is a customer of the Trade Desk, what it allows them to do is target their audience and then set up a program where it just, the program operates and buys ads like an algorithm. And so it can be, it's constantly looking for ad space, either on the internet or through the connected TV platforms. And there's auctions. There are thousands of auctions every hour on every piece of web or TV real estate you can imagine. And this is what the Trade Desk programmatic platform does. They, in advertising, they used to call it a demand-side platform, and this is the next iteration of it. And the reason I'm really excited about the Trade Desk is because, you know, when you think about a new product that is a new category, say like the smartphone, it all of a sudden creates this new market that didn't exist before, and it's, you know, makes Apple worth nearly $1 trillion and selling 200 billion worth of iPhones every year, and Samsung as well too. But you know, it's hard to have a category killer and then have this giant market that never existed. I mean, if you think about it in food, whether it's a grocery store or a restaurant or something, you know, they can't exactly grab all the market share. Same with clothing or energy or software. You know, unless in energy, somebody comes up with a brand new battery that, you know, changes the world. But the advertising market is like $750 billion, and the programmatic aspect is less than $50 billion. So the Trade Desk is taking over, and because the new model is the way things are going digitally. And the reason, you know, that Google and Facebook are what they are is because of all the advertising they sell. They sell together. They sell $125 billion worth of digital advertising a year, and that's over half of that market. But the Google and Facebook are these walled gardens. You can only do stuff inside those walls, whereas the Trade Desk is letting advertisers have access to every web page. So like you notice you're on the internet now and you see the ad change every 30 seconds and it may or may not be targeted to you, but those are the auctions constantly going on every piece of real estate that you could advertise. So I'm not saying that the Trade Desk will be, you know, the winner who takes all, but they're going to take a big chunk. And they estimate that advertising over the next 5 to 10 years will become a $1 trillion market, and that programmatic will just keep, the new model will keep replacing the old, just as connected TV has, you know, everybody's cutting the cord, and that's replaced the old model of television. So, you know, I think it's a big revolution, and I'm an investor in the Trade Desk. They just reported last week. Very exciting. You know, went over the conference call. The CEO, Jeff Green, who came up with this idea about 10 years ago, he gave like a 25-minute introduction on the conference call, which is pretty rare for a CEO, and just went over the whole ecosystem. So I recommend to anybody who wants to learn more about the Trade Desk, either go on their website, watch some of their videos. He's got some short 2-minute explainer videos where he tries to explain what this revolution is about in advertising. And but the conference call is great too. So I'm an investor. The stock is doing nicely here because they have partnerships with Amazon, Roku, and Disney. All right, now to help me break it all down, because there's so much to discuss, I brought in Ben Raines, who is a research analyst here at Zacks. And what's interesting is that Ben and I did a show about 6 months ago where we do a weekly top stock pick thing here where, you know, two strategists come in on Monday morning and they both talk about their favorite stock for that week. Well, we didn't know what each other's stock was, and my stock was the Trade Desk, and his stock was Roku. And I was like, this is a match made in heaven because of the way that these two platforms work together, where the Trade Desk is your gateway to putting ads on stream in front of streaming viewers via Roku. And I got a little worried recently. Trade Desk stock was going below 200 because Roku bought a competitor called DataXu, smaller competitor. But the reality is, as Jeff Green just explained to us last week, is that DataXu is small and Roku wants to have their own platform. But, they're still doing tons of business with the Trade Desk and the partnership is still there. So enough of that. Let's talk to Ben Raines. Ben, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Kevin. Appreciate it.
So are you excited about Disney Plus launching today?
I am. Not necessarily to instantly start watching a bunch of old Disney movies or anything like that, but just to see what it starts off and is this going to then kick off this wave of where people are actually seriously talking about Netflix being not in dire straits, but just are they in trouble? Do they need to change some of their business practices? And I think we're going to get into a lot of it today of is this model of dumping everything at once, no ads, just giant library, is this going to be sustainable for Netflix for the long haul? And who knows at this point?
Yeah, and I have traded Netflix here and there, but I always get really scared of it because it can be so volatile around earnings, right?
Yeah.
And you hope you catch the pop, and then maybe if you buy some call options, you won't risk, too much. You won't lose too many fingers. But, we've always thought, well, it's about the subscriber growth. As long as they have the subscriber growth, and yet the other thing that keeps growing is the investment spending. They're creating all these new shows, and they're only charging you, what is a Netflix?
It's so their most popular one is $12.99 a month, okay. And that's for two screens at once. And then okay. They have different tiers. They have an $8.99 and a $15.99 for four.
And do they still have the problem once. Where somebody, your cousin in another state can just log on?
Yeah.
So to me, it's like they've always, if they're going to spend this much money to create unique original programming, why don't they just raise the price to $20? And then along comes Apple and says, we're doing this for $5.
Yeah.
So the model seems under major pressure. And then the other thing we just talked about, like you call it, they just dump the program and people can then binge watch a brand new thing for a weekend. I think that's a terrible idea from a behavioral standpoint. You're totally missing how humans like to engage with content over time and have this anticipation, talk about it at work, talk about the latest episode, and then look forward to the next episode and have it be like a season, like a football season or something.
Yeah, I mean, this is something that HBO's been doing for 20 years. They did it with The Sopranos, where it just became in the conversation for every Sunday night for a decade, and then they repeated that with Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones, yep.
And Netflix will spend hundreds of million dollars on, say, a show like Stranger Things, and they hype it up for a couple months before their summer launch of, I think this past summer they did it on 4th of July. And then they just dump all 10 or 12 episodes at once. And most people, if they're really excited, watch it all either that night or that weekend, and then it's over.
Right.
And you've spent all this money and all this advertising hype, and then no one's talking about it anymore because they've just watched it all at once. You don't even remember necessarily even what happened because you're not thinking about that episode after it's over. You're just right on to the next one. It even has the little thing where it's like, it'll instantly play the next one for you. I mean, that's their whole model.
And from my perspective on the behavioral point of view is that you lose that emotional affinity, that connection. It's like dating, you know, dating is not one weekend and, you know, you're off to the next. It's a long-term thing.
Yeah. And I think that Apple and Disney both showed you that they think that model is not where it's going, because Apple TV Plus rolled out on November 1st. They don't have much, 9 shows to start with. They're 3 big shows. They rolled out the first 3 episodes all at once, but then they're going to do them on a weekly basis after that. And Disney Plus's first big show is The Mandalorian, which is this Star Wars show they've spent a bunch of money on, and you're going to just see 1 episode a week. So Disney and Bob Iger have put a lot of money in. They've staked a lot of their future of the company on streaming, and they're saying, we're going to launch it. They launched today, and you're only getting 1 episode of this show we've been hyping to you for over a year. So we're not going to give you it all at once. You're going to have to wait, and we're going to talk about it. I already looked up today on multiple different sort of sites like The Ringer or something like that, where they're talking about TV shows and just popular culture. Here's everything we know about the first episode of The Mandalorian. What do you think is going to happen next week? And that's exactly what they want, is people to talk about it. Whereas Stranger Things come out and it's over.
And this brings me back to the trade desk, because you create that kind of buzz and that kind of anticipation, you're going to attract more eyeballs to that event. And what do advertisers want? They want as many eyeballs as they can. And they're going to pay a premium. And that's what the trade desk does. They do an auction. They let you know, bidders compete for that ad space.
Yeah, and if we're going to talk about this sort of larger streaming war in general, I talked about it on my show yesterday that I think one of the best deals in all of this streaming war, and this is going to include when NBC Universal rolls out Peacock and AT&T rolls out their HBO Max in the spring, that Disney Plus, you can get that standalone version for $6.99, but you can also get it bundled with Disney Plus, ad-supported Hulu, and then ESPN Plus, which is kind of their pared-down version of ESPN for streaming, all for $12.99. So all three of those for the same price as Netflix.
Right, and look at the variety you're getting. Yeah. You know, it's not the perfect meal, but boy, you got a lot of stuff on your plate that takes care of your whole family, right?
Exactly. So in this world where there's so many options, that seems to me, by far at the moment, as the best option there is.
Yeah. So Jeff Green last week I'm calling his conference call opening, I'm calling it a manifesto, because the way he went on, and he's just so passionate about it. He talked about companies like Spotify being a real innovator, or like a tea leaf company. Like you watch what some of these companies are doing, and maybe he'd include Apple there, that they sort of set the trend that everybody follows. What did Spotify do that was different or special?
Yeah, so Spotify, I pay for non-added support at Spotify. So I think we actually have a family plan where you can get multiple $12.99 or $10.99. The price isn't necessarily relevant, but you can pay for ad-free completely. And then you could also just get it with ad-supported. So it doesn't mean that people who have become accustomed to not hearing ads on Spotify then all of a sudden have to hear ads. You just give people options. So if you want to have the streaming music and the podcast on Spotify, but you don't mind hearing the ads, we have it for you. And that's a really successful business for Spotify. They get a lot of users. They still make a lot of the money through the subscription-based model, but they have 2 options. So they get a lot of users total there.
Yeah, and I was thinking of what Netflix is up against. And we're going to talk about what Jeff Green says about Netflix. Oh, but I want to mention with Spotify is the fastest growing segment for the trade desk was audio, 162% year-over-year growth. And he says that will just keep going, because that's not just music. It's also podcasts
right here, what we're doing right now.
Exactly. Like, and we thought we were at peak podcast a while ago, but podcasts are becoming a lot like a TV show, where you just have all these different audiences, or you know, people want to engage, and if the creator of the content gets value out of it, either through engagement or new customers or new leads, then they're going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about Netflix. So here's what I'm going to read to you, what Jeff Green said last week about Netflix and their ad-free model. He says, more providers are shifting to streaming platforms, but the competition is becoming more intense. As we have seen, platforms such as Netflix are fighting tooth and nail for subscriber growth while having to issue new debt just to keep up the pace in the war for premium content. There's only so much subscription demand, and there are new competitors every month with massive established content libraries. So that would be
Disney Plus
and Comcast, right?
HBO.
AT&T, yeah. Right? I mean, those are armies you're up against. He says it all points to growth in ad-funded models. He says, and I firmly believe that even Netflix will start to experiment with ad-supported services in the future. I believe they will eventually adopt what others have, giving consumers the choice to pay more and avoid all ads or pay less and see a few highly relevant ads. Is he right about the pathway forward for Netflix?
100%.
Yeah.
I don't really see... I mean, it's not going to happen tomorrow or even a year from now, maybe, but... I mean, Hulu right now, which now Disney controls, has a non-ad-supported version and a subscription version.
Okay.
Or an ad-supported version and a non-ad-supported version. So that's what they're going to have to do. Eventually, as more and more people transition away from that quote-unquote paid TV, which is cable TV, people don't necessarily, especially when there's all these different options, they might not see a need to pay to subscribe to Netflix, but they would watch shows on Netflix with ads because they like a few of the Netflix shows. So that's just an offering that I don't see how Netflix, as they kind of, we saw the last two quarters, they missed back-to-back quarters for the first time in forever. After they missed by 2 million in the second quarter, and the last time they missed by 1 million, they crushed it out of the park. The next time they missed again in the third quarter. So that tells you something, that they're struggling to get the users, especially here in the U.S. where the market's more and more saturated. So if people aren't willing to pony up this $12.99 a month, why not roll out an ad-supported version of it?
How do you describe Hulu? What kind of platform is it, and why did Disney buy them? And was it a good move?
Oh, I think it's totally a great move for Disney.
Was Hulu an original content creator?
So Hulu kind of started in... I might be wrong in some of these dates. Hulu started, kind of popped up around when Netflix first started going on their non-just DVD mail to your house, which seems like a different era, right. It seems like forever ago.
The old days.
Yeah. So they started doing where they would buy... they'd get the streaming rights to a show like Friends. And I don't even know if that's true, but... They became a place where you could just buy and watch streaming shows.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have an ad-supported version. So you could watch, say, a show that was on NBC the night before. You could watch it or 2 days later on Hulu. And it used to be that a bunch of the different companies all owned parts of Hulu, like Fox and different companies owned a part of Hulu. And then Disney has slowly, and through its big Fox deal, that's $71 million deal, they got that part. And then they just bought more of it. So now they own a majority of it all.
So that was their big entry into streaming.
Yeah. And now, and they also bought this streaming tech company a few years back called BAM Tech, Disney did. And that was Major League Baseball's big streaming service. And they actually helped HBO launch their streaming service. So that has been kind of behind the scenes for Disney, is this technology for their streaming future. But going forward, Hulu is going to be where Disney launches what they call their more adult-focused programming. Disney Plus is going to be that family-friendly thing. And Hulu is going to be where they roll out all the Fox programming.
Like their HBO or their Netflix.
Yes, yeah. Because they had that big Fox deal. So FX is, you could kind of say it as like the cable version of HBO. That's where all of that programming is going to live, is Hulu. So that's why this partner, or this kind of bundled package of Disney Plus, Hulu, and ESPN Plus is kind of a home run right out of the gates. You have that family aspect of Disney Plus with the Marvel and the Star Wars and the Pixar, and then you have the adult focused programming on Hulu, and then you get some of your live sports on ESPN Plus.
It's such an exciting move to me as an investor, like strategically. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously the consumers and viewers are, I heard Even our engineer here, Danny, said he's already grabbed Disney Plus and dropping Netflix.
So, and that's today. Yeah.
Right. And I mean, how many more millennials are doing that? But from a business standpoint, strategically, it just seems like, boom, Disney just laid it down. And we were like, Apple what? Apple who? I mean, but, you know, Apple said, well, obviously, you know, gain a following. But, you know, this was a big deal.
Yeah. I mean, in Apple, I mean, as you know, they don't need to make any money on Apple TV ever. And they could drop it tomorrow. It wouldn't matter.
Exactly. Exactly.
So I see maybe long term. And they rolled it out for $4.99 a month. You get it free if you buy a new iPhone. So they're going to get a lot of people doing it. It's the holiday season. You get a year subscription to Apple TV Plus. So for $4.99, it's gonna grow. Yeah. Their content libraries, there was only 9 shows. Yeah. It's slowly gonna grow and grow. They have some big names on there already: Jennifer Aniston and Reese Witherspoon.
Right.
They're paying. There's gonna be Steven Spielberg shows. So they're gonna be there long term. Oh, yeah. I think. But
and,
just not.
And you're exactly right. Yeah. They have the luxury.
Yeah, they don't
of
care.
Experimenting with this for 5-10 years.
Yeah, they're not taking on debt like Netflix to fund their core business.
Yeah. Yeah, Netflix is looking desperate compared. Yeah. So yeah, Apple can just sit back and relax and experiment. And just like, because Apple's real thing, you know, they built that $1 billion spaceship out in Cupertino.
Yeah.
I love to call it a spaceship. That they're working on what comes after the iPhone, because they have to figure that out. Is it going to be, you know, an earpiece, virtual reality glasses, what? And, you know, that's their main focus, is how do we replace this $200 billion a year in phone sales?
Yeah, and another company that's also operating in this same realm, and they see streaming video kind of as an ancillary side project, is Amazon, which we haven't even talked about.
Oh, right.
Amazon Prime Video is included in your monthly Amazon Prime subscription. So most people are getting Amazon Prime and they're using it for those delivery deals and those deals on various e-commerce goods, whatever people are buying on Amazon nonstop all day, every day. And they're just throwing in their streaming service for free, which at this point, people don't talk about it that much. They have their own original programming. Some of the shows have been relative hits. But that long term, and I've talked about this before, is that they have spent money on that live sports aspect as well. So you can watch Thursday Night Football on Amazon Prime, streaming on Amazon Prime. They've actually bought up rights in the UK to Premier League Soccer over this Christmas period. It's going to start this year, which is, some people will not understand. It would be like if some British company came into the U.S. and bought the streaming rights for Thanksgiving football. It's kind of like that big of a deal. Yeah. So the people in the U.K. are going to be able to only watch this big set of soccer games on Amazon Prime this winter, which is kind of a big deal. So I think that's another company that's kind of flown under the radar of this streaming business, where this is not their main business by any means. In long term, you have... I think the only companies that are really doing it are Disney and Amazon, because they offer that live sports aspect, which is really the only reason anyone's not cutting the cord to begin with, because you don't need to watch any show on TV exactly when it premieres anymore besides sports, because you're not going to watch sports 2 days later because it doesn't matter anymore if you already knows what happened. So I think that ability to have the best of both worlds is really, and this really brings in the advertising.
So
live sports is advertising.
I'm glad you brought up Amazon. I'll say real quick on the live sports, the Trade Desk, TTD, has a partnership with Disney, and it's starting small, and we're not sure where it's going to go, but one of the things that they're talking about is, you know, live ad auctions during games, because a game is unpredictable. Who knows what's going to happen in the fourth inning or the 11th inning of a baseball game, and that ad time hasn't been sold yet. So advertisers are going to come in there, you know, it's an exciting game, same with football going to overtime or whatever. So that will open up some unique opportunities. Now with Amazon, the Trade Desk also partnered with Amazon for Fire TV, and this is important. I mean, this is huge for the Trade Desk, which is only a $10 billion company, to have Amazon as a partner here. But what's also interesting is why Amazon did it. Amazon has already gets to see all the experience that Google and Facebook have had and getting in trouble with, you know, advertising and people's data. And Amazon thought, well, advertisers can come to us and buy time directly on Fire TV, but we don't know if we want to exclusively be the channel. So let's have a third party. Let's have a gateway and let people choose. They don't have to come to us. They can use an automatic ad buying platform like the Trade Desk. So that was a win-win, obviously, for both of those companies. And the other element here is the privacy factor. Now, we know how Google and Facebook get in trouble, as you know, they dominate digital advertising, but they also have a lot of your data and may know everything about you.
They probably do know everything about you.
So how is the Trade Desk going to make money on consumer data being able to target consumers without falling into the same traps as Google and Facebook? Now, I am not an expert on this, but what the Trade Desk has invented is what they call a unified ID solution, where they are not tracking a person in the same way that Facebook and Google do, by using this unique identifier. And you can go on their website, or you could just Google Trade Desk unified ID solution, and you can see how they explain it to advertisers. And there's a Q&A on there about how the ID is different and how advertisers may not use the ID to collect data about a person, like can't collect their email address, phone number, address, anything like that. So we're in the era of everything being tracked. We're in the digital age, so you can't get away from it. I mean, obviously you have a choice. If you want to subscribe to something and have no ads targeted at you, that, you know, you have that choice. But if you're going to do anything that's ad supported, you know, and you allow advertisers to target ads to you, this is being done in a cleaner way, a less invasive way, where the Trade Desk certainly won't be collecting your data. And so this is I don't know if it's the perfect solution, but right now it is an evolution beyond what Google and Facebook have done that I think is positive for the market.
Yeah, and I'm sure it's just, as you mentioned with Amazon, that just with this sort of stench around Google and Facebook, that maybe the Trade Desk will get more people who are just like, I don't want to deal with for whatever various political reasons. Not that that's their whole business model or anything, but they might get just a trickle-out effect from people who just don't want to be in a business where... Who knows what's going to happen with those companies based on how much pressure is going on right now?
They're going to get hauled up before Congress again, I'm sure, at some point, and have to answer for privacy issues, data breaches, security, that kind of thing.
I mean, think how many Facebook's, this is kind of off the topic, but their cryptocurrency, they were going to roll out, and they might still, but all those companies who were going to be partners, they've all backed out based on the political backlash already, and it was kind of just news fodder, and they're already like, we don't want to deal with this at all. So if there's anything of actual significance that happens to either Google or Facebook, the Trade Desk would definitely be someone to benefit from right away.
Yeah, and the Trade Desk also just likes to be as neutral as possible. They work with advertising agencies, but they'll also let a corporation like Procter & Gamble, you know, have access to the platform and do their ad buying that way. So it's almost like they're becoming a utility if all these streaming platforms are gonna I shouldn't say all of them, because some may not, Trade Desk may not have access to some of them, but in a certain sense they're like a utility. Listen, we're gonna wrap up here soon, but the last thing I have to ask you about is Roku. So not too long ago, Comcast comes out and they're going to have a little box and it's going to be free and whatever. And I think this must have been, was it in?
Yeah, there was a specific day. It just popped.
Yeah, it was in.
They fell off the map real fast.
It must have been early September, because I saw the stock drops from $175 down to $100 in about 3 weeks. And I mean, if you didn't think this was a Roku killer, the price was telling you, and people were like, Roku's going to go to, you know, $50 now. It's all over. What were your thoughts at the time?
I wasn't worried about it at all. I mean, they were, Comcast was going to give away something they were charging you $5 a month for anyways. But Roku has just been established. They have so many things that are already built into televisions. They have bigger market share than Amazon of these streaming devices. So that's not just going to disappear overnight because Comcast, in an effort to try to lure some people to their eventual new streaming platform for free, is just going to make people throw their Roku away that they already have. Or, and the Roku devices aren't expensive to begin with, so it's not like anyone's shelling out $100 to buy a streaming TV player.
Is the has the big win for Roku been that they're being built into the new smart TVs? Is that?
Yeah, that's a big part of it too. And they were kind of, along with Amazon and Google, they were one of the first companies to offer these things where you just plug in this little device into the back of your TV to then be able to stream whatever you want. And now it kind of seems like no one doesn't have some type of streaming player, whether it's an Amazon Fire Stick or one of those Google Chromecasts or a Roku. I have actually both. And another reason I wasn't super worried for Roku is that a big part of their business, as we're talking about with the Trade Desk, is that they are attractive to advertisers these days as well. Mm-hmm. People are paying to get their various streaming services at the top of hits to maybe say, hey, you're on Roku, you might want to download this app. And they also have their own Roku channel, which is a ad-supported platform as well. So they're offering free movies and TV shows to anyone who has a Roku, but there's ads. So it's not just this device business, and a big part of their business that's growing going forward is this more ad-focused business that they see as kind of the next iteration of their company, along with all of that.
Who is threatened by Roku, or who gets hurt by Roku among all these platforms? Like, how does Roku steal potential revenue streams?
And this is something that people get mad at Apple for, and what Netflix gets mad at Apple for, is they take a percentage of, if you download HBO on Roku, they get a percentage of that sale. That's what Apple TV does as well. So if you buy Netflix through Apple TV, Apple takes a percentage of that Netflix purchase. And that they're getting sued for that right now, Apple, because they take so much of those downloads from those people. So that's really the only thing that they would be really taking from, is that, so if you buy HBO on Amazon Fire, then Amazon gets a little bit of that purchase every time. Mm-hmm. So they're not necessarily stealing any business from anyone, unless Netflix, which they don't have their own plug into the back of the TV streaming quote unquote player. So it's not like Netflix is hurting because Roku's doing well. They don't have any incentive to not work directly with Roku. In fact, if they weren't working with Roku and weren't available, they lose a lot of people, because then they wouldn't even have access to even download Netflix.
Right. And just watching the price action in Roku since that went down to $100, I was looking at buying it there, and I was looking at other things, and all of a sudden the stock just took off, and in 3 weeks it was back to, you know, 150. And then it gapped out on earnings and has almost recovered that. So this tells me that a lot of large investors who look out 2-3 years, they still love the Roku model.
And they're just starting to expand internationally. And that's something their CEO's talked about for the last couple of quarters, is we're spending money to get outside of North America. So, yeah, I saw that happen in one day where it was the stock's down some unreasonable number because Comcast says they're going to offer a $5 thing for free. Oh, no. It's all over.
Yeah. All right, Ben. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
A lot of good stuff here. If I just had to sum up, I would say, hey, Netflix, that stock price and that valuation could be in trouble. They've got a lot of stuff to figure out. Amazon and Apple are obviously fine. TV is like a side project for them. Disney is, you know, hitting a grand slam here. Roku, as we talked about, is fine. And then my favorite company of all is the intermediary, is the Trade Desk, is the advertising platform to get it all done and let people make money off of their content. All right, Ben. Good discussion. We'll probably have to revisit this in a couple of months as the topsy-turvy world of the streaming wars.
For sure, yeah.
Goes on. All right, we'll talk to you soon.
This material is being provided for informational purposes only, and nothing herein constitutes investment, legal, accounting, or tax advice, or a recommendation to buy, sell, or hold a security. Do not act or rely upon the information and advice given in this podcast without seeking the services of competent and professional legal, tax, or accounting counsel. Publication and distribution of this podcast is not intended to create, and the information contained herein does not constitute an attorney-client relationship. No recommendation or advice is being given as to whether any investment or strategy is suitable for a particular investor. It should not be assumed that any investments in securities, companies, sectors, or markets identified and described were or will be profitable. All information is current as of the date herein and is subject to change without notice. Any views or opinions expressed may not reflect those of Zacks Investment Research as a whole.